kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
I'm cold. How are you, Joe?
I've got a cold.
Oh, no. Gross. Go away. We can't be friends if we're talking germs. No.
Oh, man. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out, keeping us company.
I guess our guests are going to be disappointed.
Yeah, just a little.
Should we introduce them? Now that you've done spread the germs with everybody.
You know what? You introduce them. I'm tired of your shenanigans.
No, I'm the co-host, not the host. I don't do this work.
First, joining us after quite a while away, George Eastmead, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's good to have you back on the show. You brought company this time. Would you like to introduce them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have here with me today Baidi Guo from Lantern Studio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Baidi. I'm the art director from Lantern Studio. Hello, Cole. Hello, Joe.
Hi.
Hello. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you. By the way, I got a code as well. So I'm in the group.
Hold on. Let me go get one of my face masks.
Face mask. So you were here to talk about your game, Luna, the Shadow Dust. Tell us about this game. I personally don't know too much about it. Cole has been raving about it for a while.
I'm actually playing it while we do this. There's a free demo available and I'm in there.
Okay. I can introduce a little bit about this game. So Luna, the Shadow Dust, it is a full hand animated puzzle point and click adventure game. We have been developing this game since 2016, and it will be out very soon, next month, February the 13th. So everyone should be able to play it in probably a couple of weeks.
For the people who don't know what the game is, give us the elevator pitch.
Yeah, like, sure.
Give us a little bit about the beginning of the game as well.
Okay, so briefly, the story about this game is like this. One day, the balance of the light and the dark due to an accident was broken in the world of Luna. A young boy finds himself wakes up by the bottom of an ancient tower. So along this adventure in the game, this boy will get into this tower. On the way, he will also meet a mysterious companion. If anyone have seen this game, it looks like a cat/dog-ish creature. So together they will go into the tower and try to trace back the memory of the old. So the player will also discover along the journey with them what's their real relationship between them. And also in the end, they will discover what has happened in the past that causing this accident.
Now, what is the companion called again?
We have actually in our original design document a name. It's called Leia. And our main character, this boy, he's called Yuri. But because of one of the unique feature of this game, which is we don't have any text or any dialogue to show anything in text form in this game. So the player, they don't really get to find out their names within the game. But in the background story, the settings, we have this name for our main character. But funny thing is, we are kind of lazy to use them as well. We just call them the boy, the cat, or the dog.
The cat or the dog.
Are there special meanings behind the names that were chosen, even though they're not used?
Let me think. First of all, I think when we design the name, we like the sound of it. Mm-hmm. We don't want the name sounds particularly falls into any culture. So not like naming them Emily or like Alex. So it's very specific Western culture background name. So it has a nice ring to it, and it's easy to pronounce, easy to remember. I think that's quite important. So if any player finds out what's the name of them, it's easy to remember is one of the key. But other than that, it's quite simple. We just like the sound of it.
Which works.
It's always a good way to go about it. Sometimes when you have a name that is a little unusual and to Western ears, it's like, oh, is there some big complicated story? But sometimes it's just nice to hear, no, we just liked it.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be said for that kind of storytelling.
Well, yes. Yeah, it's not very long, so people can, you know, if any people want to write about the review of the story, they don't have to spell a very, very long game. So that's handy.
Look, as someone who also writes reviews as well as does them on the podcast, I appreciate when I can.
How long of a game is it looking to be?
The gameplay time, it depends on how long each player experience with different puzzle. So we will say average gameplay time 7 to 8 hours.
That's pretty good.
For average, like tonight, if you feeling comfy during the weekend or want to try our game, I think it's over the weekend. It will be a nice gaming experience for you to finish. So it won't drag too long. Also, it's not too short either. So it has enough time for us to build up a good story, so people can really sink into the story and experience the whole thing.
That sounds awesome.
What kind of development time do you have put into the game, given that it has hand-drawn animations and all of that?
Oh, we have been developed this game, I think, officially from 2016, after we had our Kickstarter campaign. So it has been 4 years till now. That's quite a long time. Originally we thought we are really naive when we did a campaign. We saw we can finish it within 1 year. And then by the end of the first year, we saw, okay, one more year, this should be done. But it never finished according to the plan ever. So end up we spending 4 years, properly working on this game.
Baby's being incredibly modest here. She spent a lot of time doing the artwork for the game because she herself is the art director. So everything that went into the game from a visual standpoint is all her work. And there was a time back about a year or so ago when she was working very hard on trying to do the cinematics for the game. And she was expressing to me how if she got just a few seconds done of the animations that are actually in the game done within that whole day's work, she was happy. So there's endless going over the same lines drawn by hand, putting it back into the computer, drawing over it, colouring it in, adding shading, adding lighting, all the rest of it, just to get those few seconds of animation. And then once the game is actually finished and all compiled, there are, I think, Bailey, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there are something like 250 actual player animations in the game.
Oh, wow. And then yes, the sets.
20-25 minutes of actual cutscenes, is that correct?
Yep, 20 to 25 minutes, I think. I think
that
it's 22 something.
Yeah,
it is a lot. Like when I first realized that's the total workload I'm facing, I won't say regret, but it was really daunting. Have to, you know, to face this amount of workload. And George is absolutely right. And I was talking to him, saying that I have to find a way to work on this without overwhelming myself, because I know I can do it as long as I plan it well. Because some of the work, if you break down to 1 day's work and each day you break it down to morning and afternoon, every morning you break it down to hours, it reduced the pressure for an animator like me. Because my background was animation, I studied animation in the uni. So for anyone who studied animation before, I'm talking about traditional hand-draw frame-by-frame animation, or they were animator themselves, we kind of mentally prepared for hideous work. This is our life. We just have to accept it if we choose this path. And we've seen so many other great films, hand animated film. The production time just like years. Studio Ghibli's animation film takes them like 7 years, averagely 7-5 years to finish. So this is our life. We have to. We chose this way for a reason, not because of it's hard, because it is hard, but it's also very rewarding as well. It has something I don't think any other art form can replace. It's very tangible. You can express yourself very well through each frame. You have total control when you do the animation. So although it is a lot of work now I think about it, but gladly I finished that on time, on like continuously pushing back deadlines.
I do traditional illustration, then I usually will have a similar workflow to you where I scan it in, work on it digitally, and then I go back and forth between traditional and digital a lot. And so I can see a lot of those elements in the art for Luna, and that was one of the things that drew me to the game in the first place. So as soon as I saw a screenshot, I was like, oh, I am down for that.
Oh,
I didn't even know what the gameplay was. I was just like, that speaks to my soul.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. Thank you very much.
Hearing you talk about that workflow, and I'm just like, I don't do animations. I just do like watercolor and traditional still illustrations, but I still just like, I know exactly what you're talking about. And for what it amounts to, at least one person really appreciates it, because every scene that I have come into, I'm just like, aw, I know what went into that, and it's just, it's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yes, because I have the exactly same feeling when I see other artwork or other game, which is I can clearly see how much work they have been put through. I really appreciate them. I appreciate them, the artists or the team, even more, because they, for some reason, choose a hard way. And the result came out so well as well. So a couple of days, I heard someone during another interview saying that hand-draw animation is like a dying art. I really don't. I hope it's not gonna die, because I still wish that every young generation would love to pick up learning traditional animation. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah, by making game merge traditional hand drawn technique into game, I think it's a good practice as well for me.
And I personally love
the job.
Yeah, I personally love the hand-drawn look. I'm not an artist myself, so I can't really speak to the experiences the way Cole can, but I appreciate good hand-drawn artwork over computer-generated, quote-unquote, perfection any day of the week. It just having that personal touch and even those minor flaws, it just gives it more personality to me.
Yes, I do like that as well. When Crow was talking about doing traditional illustration, like watercolor, then you have to scan in, they have to, you know, do it again. I totally understand. I already blessed by doing traditional frame-by-frame animation in a computer. So it has already saved me quite a bit of a time, although I still have to do each frame by hand painting in a software. I know there are game studio. I think one of them is called Amanita, the studio that produced Machinarium, Samorist series. That particular game studio, they the way they do, it's even more extreme. Like I recently watched a documentary about them. They were design everything in computer, but they were printed out and draw it again on a cardboard or something, then cut a cardboard, make into a real model, then import it back into the computer. So I was like, how these guys are crazy. So they have 3 to 4 times extra work. Probably people don't even know, understand. But they are so dedicated, and they were really proud of the way they're making art. So I have such high respect towards artists like that.
The more I play through this game, the more I can definitely see the Studio Ghibli inspiration as well.
Yeah, I'm a
like, it is definitely
it.
There.
Yes.
It is adorable. What other inspiration did you have for the game?
Oh, we had a lot of inspiration. The story-wise, the original idea of this of our game was based on one of my student animation back in like 2007, long time ago. Mm-hmm. So, like the two key elements of this game, the moon, Luna, and the very tall tower, which is where the whole game is gonna took place. These two key elements was from my short animation back then. I just like them, I guess. So I think about them all the time, even so many years after I graduate. I was looking for a story that I can fit these two elements in. And then there's a book. I read a book which is by Ursula Le Guin. She wrote the Earthsea Quartet, which is, I think, 4 book, fantasy novel. That book, particularly the first one, I think The Wizard of Earthsea, inspired the whole story of Luna the Shadow Dust. So I kind of merged these two together, the story and those two elements that I'm always looking for to find a fantasy world that I can drop them in. So that was the story and the setting of the Luna that where I get inspiration from. Also, as I mentioned before, Studio Ghibli films, I watched a lot of them. They inspired the art style. And also, storytelling-wise, I don't know if you guys have ever heard an artist called Sean Tan. He's an Australian illustrator. Mm-hmm. He had so many graphic novel book, does not have any text in it. So I find this kind of graphic novel very interesting, because it appeals to everyone. You don't have to learn English or one particular language to be understand it. But a story told through each picture so well. And also it leave you a lot of room to imagine things, to give your own interpretation of the story. So I really like this kind of feeling of telling a story that you don't use any text or something. So I kind of merge all of this inspiration I had throughout the years together. There must be something that unconsciously inspired me, but I can't remember them now. but the key element that inspired Luna.
Adventure games often have a background where there's a lot of text and a lot of reading that goes on in the actual gameplay itself. Oftentimes, especially with indie games, people don't always have the resources to do voice acting. So there's going to be a lot of physical text you have to sit there and read through.
Yeah, that's right.
It's good that with Luna, we've gone with the direction to actually have zero text in the game, because aside from the imagination, it also helps people to actually just take on their own interpretation of exactly how the story unfolds. And it opens up to a number of regions as well. So, for instance, we might have been able to perhaps translate it into, say, 15 languages with our limited resources. However, without any text at all, even on the menu system, we've been able to open it up to the whole world.
Which works really, really well. That is so much less work that you guys have to worry about.
Yes, we dodged the bullet of localization. I recently, because I still love narrative game, I play loads of other game with heavy dialogue and the text, I enjoy them. But sometimes I will try to switch to, my mother tongue is Chinese, so sometimes I switch to a Chinese translated version if they have one. But unfortunately, sometimes I see certain jokes or certain culture related puns didn't get to translate into another language properly. I really understand that in translation, you have these challenges that something is just not translatable, unfortunately. It's a shame because I find those kind of jokes, if you can find a way to translate it, it could be really funny. But in the reality is quite a few of the game I played recently has this issue. So probably that's one of the reasons subconsciousness is telling me that if I can't do this 100%, is there any other way, alternative way I can design the game without using dialogue at all? So maybe the story might be things be vague towards the player to start with, but I hope this kind of mysteriousness and untold, what do you call that? This will make people more curious about the story, the lore of the game when they are playing.
Yeah, I'm very curious just checking out the screenshot, so I'm jealous that Cole is actually playing it.
I'm in here too. I am just like focused, and then I stop and go, oh, I'm supposed to be asking questions.
Yeah, you are.
But that's an impressive feat though, all on its own. I'm just sitting here playing the demo while we chat, and like I'm so wrapped up in solving these puzzles that I'm like, I'm literally talking to the developer, could ask anything I want, but look, there's this puzzle. they're well
proud
done
of you, Cole.
And they're intriguing, and like I want to see where it goes next, and I'm so proud of like the ones I've set here knocked out. I'm just like, I know that at any minute the game's gonna kick me out and be like, nope, you have to wait. It's not time. We've hit a wall, and I'm gonna be sad. Because we still have we have a whole month until it comes out. What am I supposed to do?
Less than a month.
We have a whole 3 weeks. I'm a horribly impatient person.
I can vouch for that. She is.
Yeah. I might have just caused some trouble here by starting this demo when I did. That's a good thing. That's the hallmark of a good game.
Yes, if the demo leave people want to have more to play the full version, it's definitely a good sign. So I'm really happy to hear that people looking for to play more.
Good. Now that you are within 3 weeks of the release window, are you excited, or are you stressed out that you're in that crunch period? How's that going for you?
I guess both. I'm super excited. Imagine that you have this your favorite kid, but now it's time for him to go to college. You can't wait to kick him out any minute. it's this kind of mixed feeling. You really want him to just, you know, get out there.
Get the hell out of my house.
Yes.
Like my oldest sister, 16, that's speaking to me on a personal level right now.
Yeah, but also meanwhile, you are so worried about, is everything perfectly tuned? Is all the bugs fixed? What are people going to say about it? Did everything we can? So you're worried as well. So it's kind of mixed feeling. Yeah. And also George was been helping us so much on like the social media side. How we promote this game? Mm-hmm. Our team is very small. We only have, 4 people on the team. So,
oh, wow.
So I think George can talk about how we choose a particular way to promote our game without massive budget.
Yeah, sure. So the backstory really is that I first came into working on the game a good couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago now. It was when I first saw the game at an event, AdventureX, that we have here in London. And Bailey, you were exhibiting the game with your husband, and I happened to see it from across the room. So wandered over and I had a look at that and I thought, wow, that looks absolutely fantastic. And that is, of course, the first thing that draws everybody in, the visual art style. And I was watching someone play it and I was looking at how they were engaging with those puzzles and things. And it really started to make me think about a lot of the point and click puzzle adventure games that I grew up with when I was a kid in the 90s. And looking at those and playing all of those types of games on my dad's PC. And as I watched folks play the game and I spoke with you, Bailey, it was really interesting to me to see how people just immediately engaged, one, with the characters and two, with the systems, especially considering how there were no pop-ups to tell you what to do or anything else. It's all very much you sit down at the computer or however you're playing the game and you'll be able to see what you need to interact with based on how your cursor interacts or whatever other prompts come up to help you to operate on it. And I was really interested to learn, actually. I think maybe a couple of years after we first started working together, Bailey, how both, I think probably my first game that I ever really sat down and played was a point-and-click puzzle adventure game called The Neverhood. And that was actually also, I think, your first game as well, Bailey.
Yes, yes. I'm so surprised that any other one apart from me still remember this game. It was so early games in the 90s, when internet is not even there.
Exactly. So it was very serendipitous. It was interesting to see how both of us had this upbringing, even though we'd both been brought up on other sides of the planet, really. But one thing that was really noticeable about a game like The Neverhood was that after you beat the game, and by all means, it was a very hard game for a young child to play because the puzzles were really hard back in those days. It was cool to go and look after the credits and see that there were some behind the scenes footage that the developers had put together, talking about the backstory of the game, the ideas behind it, how they'd built it all together. So if you've never seen The Neverhood, and by all means, definitely go in and have a look online for that game as well, because it's a classic. But the way that game was built together wasn't with hand-drawn animation, but an even more painstakingly hand-animated system with clay. So they'd literally gone and taken every single frame of the game with clay and done claymation, as they call it. Now, it was incredible to me as a young child to look at those videos and saw how they actually put all of that together. And for me, I really wanted to help the Lantern Studio guys tell that story as well. So one of the things that we've done with our limited resources and budget on a small title like this is that we've made sure to try and do some behind-the-scenes interviews. Bailey, you've obviously spoken about the art side of things. We've made some YouTube videos about how everything went together there. We've spoken about things like fine-tuning the walking animation so that almost any pixel on the screen is clickable based off of a myriad of different animations that the characters can execute at any time, so they're not essentially just skipping over space. They very much plod across the ground as if they were in that actual space, for instance. And then we've also done an interview with Susie, who is the composer for the game. She composed completely original tracks that all went into the final soundtrack. And her story is really interesting as well. She's been able to compose some brilliant pieces based off of the emotion of the story, based on what you can or should potentially be feeling at different points, different narrative beats throughout the actual the story there. So for me, in terms of helping the team market the game and actually bring it to people, I was really, really conscious to make sure that I helped showcase that whole story behind it, showcase how much time and dedication had gone into it, the backstory, the ideas behind putting everything together. And then when it came to social media, I wanted people to have that same experience, almost seeing it across the room that I did. being able to look at it and say, wow, that looks beautiful. I really want to go play that. I want to learn more about it. And the more that I found out about the game and obviously Bailey's explanation of things like the lore and how the tower works and the relationship between the two characters that are explored within the game. Even once I'd finished playing the game, I almost wanted to keep living within that world. I wanted to learn more about it. And I hope that in the social media that we've all put together as a team, I think that hopefully our followers and friends that we have online, they feel that same way too. We've been able to give them that impression.
That's the mark of a good game, when you want to just stay living in that world.
Yeah.
Yes, I really appreciate that. Me and George, we talked about, we come up with a lot of ideas, and we try to really think that a game like this, what can, aside from the game itself, what can grasp people to introduce something to them. Like we realize that this game attracts not only just the puzzle fans, but anyone who probably interested in traditional animation or like very enjoy very nice game soundtrack. So we trying to reach out to those potential audience. They're not like big gamer themselves, but they are into music, they're into art, and hopefully by reaching out towards them, we can introduce our game to them. Say, look, if you do like music, here is a game with beautiful soundtrack. Why not give a try? So we hope that this is the right strategy for us. And George has been working so hard on this. We covered almost all kind of social media. It is a hard work. I don't know how he did it, because I can if I stay on Twitter and keep replying, my whole day just gone. So but definitely without the exposure from social media, we won't be able to reach out to so many audience like now. So I really appreciate it. Thank you, George.
You're more than welcome.
Speaking of trying to reach out to a larger audience, is there any plans for a console port of the game?
Yes, actually, a funny thing, when we started design this game, the Nintendo Switch is not even there. It's not even a thing. That's how far we started from. And now Nintendo Switch become like a very popular platform. It seems quite suitable for our game. You have a reasonably large screen, and you have touch screen, and you have the control. So very likely we will start to develop this game into a console format. Nintendo Switch will be our first choice. But we try to cover as much platform as possible. Due to our budget and the time, we can only do it one at a time. So yeah, but very likely our next one will be Switch, then other console, and followed by other mobile platform.
Nice. Yeah, we are Xbox fans on this show, so fingers crossed we see Luna show up on the Xbox in the future.
Yes, finger crossed.
Yeah, but at least it seems to that the game on PC can be played on PCs that aren't like super powered beasts, thankfully, because mine chugs along, but it's playing Luna perfectly right now.
Oh yeah. When you mentioned this, it is something that we really have to test. We have to find all kinds of laptop, PC with different spec to try whether our game can play on all these devices. Obviously, we have like a minimum requirement for the hardware, for the software. But still, we try our best to make sure that even for a very old PC or Mac, that our game can play on those, because otherwise it will be a shame that, you know, people download the game, but unfortunately some music doesn't play or animation doesn't play. But yes, this is also part of our work that we didn't consider before we set our target. That's how it leads to 4 years development. We learn new things every day.
4 years is almost up, so...
Yes.
We're just around the corner from the release, which you said again was February 13th. So it is almost on the way out.
Yes.
How does it feel that you're so close to release? Is it just like a sigh of relief that, hey, it's finally done?
It is a bit sentimental sometimes when you feel like, oh, you worked so long on a project, all those emotions. It's funny that I know these are fiction characters, but you start to feel they're someone you know, that because you develop their story, you go through their development, personal growth or something, you can call that. You watch the animation over and over. No matter how many times I play the game, towards the end, I still became quite emotional. Because of the experience that the whole journey brought me. I hope it's a good sign, because I heard if you can, impress yourself or make yourself you really feel for your own game, it will do the trick for other people, for other players. And also I'm really looking forward to watch how other people play our game, because that's a big fun part of after the development. We really enjoy the whole team. Watch how other YouTubers or the streamers play our game, try to explain with their own theories. You know, sometimes you feel like, oh, they're spot on. And sometimes you feel like, we never thought about that, but it's interesting that they think these things represent that. So I guess that's something we're looking forward to when the game is out.
You want to see how people break the game? Cole, did you break the game yet?
I haven't, but I am stuck on this puzzle. Like, I understand the basics of what to do, but there's just something I'm missing.
It's whether a player stuck on it or they went very smooth, it's all fascinating for us, because as developers, we run this puzzle like 1,000 times, so we know it by heart. So sometimes we forget what's the first time experience for other player when they first play this game. And it's a good way to remember what kind of experience we want to bring for the player as the first place. And if they stuck, but if they're enjoying it, that's a good sign. We also, because when we design a particular level, we try to guess where my player got stuck. So what my player trying to do, and we will see whether they actually follow those different passes, try to solve the puzzle. We prepared like animation, especially for like different passes. Say there's three different way to tackle this puzzle. Only one way you can reach the end. But if player try the other two, we still make sure the whole animation set is prepared for the whole experience. So even they tried that, it didn't work out, but there are some little fun animation showed in the end. So it's encouraged them to try something else. Oh, bless you.
Excuse me.
Woo. Yep.
I just realized as you were saying that I was doing something really dumb, because the animation was going, but I wasn't getting the result I wanted. And then I was like, so click something else. And now it worked. And I'm sitting here going, well, I'm not stuck anymore. Oh, my stars.
I'm so proud of you, Cole.
All I wanted to do is just kick that twig out from over here, because I think that's just going to solve all my problems.
Oh, my Lord.
Anyway, I haven't broke it, but I'm trying.
You're always trying to break games. You always do. And it impresses me how frequently you can break a game.
That means actually you have the perfect quality to become a game tester.
See? I have perfect quality.
It's very valuable quality, because we really need people who can break our game so we can fix bugs.
Well, there you go, Cole. There's your new calling in life.
I have perfect qualities, Joe. Did you hear it? It was important you hear that.
At least something about the show is perfect.
I'm going to send a text to my husband, too, and be like, somebody told me I have perfect qualities today. Are you listening? Oh, bother. That click didn't work.
Oh, well, Lord. Well, on that note, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Beatty, is there anything about the game you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
Let me think.
Well, George, anything else you wanted to chime in on?
One thing I think is quite interesting to mention is our team in our London studio, four of us, we worked on this game for years, but we all scattered around the world. I'm based in London. George is in Norwich. Our other three team members, Susie, our composer, she's in Canada, Toronto. Our programmer, Wong Guan, and our project manager, Fox, they're in Shanghai. So throughout the 4 years, that's how we've been trying to collaborate within different three different time zones. So it is very challenging. If we share the office together, I think this game can be finished a bit earlier. But yeah, so it is quite hard. I think when people ask us what was the most challenging bit for the development, I would say the distance. Loads of communications, time spent on communication, miscommunication sometimes due to that you won't be able to talk to face-to-face. That we have to find a time to have meeting together across the three time zone. So somebody have to stay late or get up really early. Also, we have to work out what's the best way to share all the file, make sure everything's synced, no one accidentally delete anything. So it is hard. This is very challenging, but for some reason, we miraculously stick together for 4 years. And there's also silver lining on this issue that we can all try to attend different Gamescom, different game show different continent. Yeah, that works. That's very convenient in a way. So save us money as well. yeah, so it is hard, but I really appreciate that our team has the willpower to put this through.
Do you have any appearances coming up that you're going to be showing the game off?
Let me think. I think we will try to attend those big Gamescom. Like there will be EGX Res in London in April, I think. Am I right, George?
Yeah, I think it's April.
April, yeah. And Gamescom, one of the biggest convention in Europe, in August. Also, in the middle, we always try to apply the free ones because we have no budget. So any Gamescom is free or like doesn't require a huge amount of money to submit. We will try to go with it.
Nice.
I'm not sure when this episode will be airing, but I think for any German listeners, I do believe that Luna will be at DreamHack in Leipzig in a couple of days' time, which will be, what's the date today? It will be the 23rd, I think.
Well, the show should be out on the 23rd, so that's...
If you're there, go check it out.
That's good timing there. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, it's been great having you on chatting about the game. I'm excited to see it come out. One more time, tell us about the game, when it's coming out, what kind of price tag we're going to see on it. Give us all the information one more time.
Okay. So Luna the Shadow Dust will be out next month, February the 13th. It will be out on Steam, on GOG.com, Humble Store, Mac, Apple Store, I think. Yep. The price on Steam, it will be £16.99, $19.99, I think. Yeah, so, and then depends on what area you're in, converted recordingly. Yep.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on. Everybody else, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more show in just a little bit. George, Beatty, it's been a pleasure having you two on the show chatting. Do either of you have any final words to wrap this up?
I would like to say thanks to my team if they are listening, or I don't know, but it, this game will not be able to finish or complete without any of us, anyone who's in the team. So I appreciate everyone so much. Thank you, George, as well, when you're here.
You're more than welcome, as I say. I think my own parting thoughts are essentially that Bailey mentioned a little while earlier how she still found herself getting moved while playing the game, even after so many years of development working on it. And I think that is a true testament to the game itself. I like to think that you originally come and you look at the game and you might be drawn in by the fantastic soundtrack that Susie put together or the beautiful art that Bailey has worked on. But I think once you're through the door and you've had a look at any of those bits and pieces, it really is actually the story and the intricate puzzles that really do keep you hooked on the game and keep playing through it. The first time I played through the game myself was all in one sitting, although I do think it is definitely worth a weekend play session, I'd say. I think it'd be good to play it two sessions. So, yeah, definitely go take a look at the free demo, which is still available on Steam, and I think it's still going to be available post-launch as well. So go take a look at that. It's free. You can play through it and join Cole as she plays through and see if you can help her with that tricky puzzle.
I solved it. I'm on to the next one. Wow. I'm a superstar.
Well done.
Proud of you, Cole.
Congratulations.
I'm so happy.
All right, I'm starting to record. Here we go. Welcome back. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, God damn it. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Cole, that was fun, wasn't it?
It was. It was a good time.
It was a good time. I didn't know if you had more to say about the game or not.
No, I was just going to let you go.
Was it Luna the Shadow Dust?
Yes. I need to sneeze, and I'm just hoping you keep talking so I can sneeze.
Oh, so someone has to sneeze.
Sounds like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
As you could tell, it is party cast time. Purnell's here. Chris, you're here. How are you two doing today?
Doing all right.
Chris appeared.
Chris appeared.
Look, if I had to suffer through that pun, everybody else does too.
You're welcome.
Funny enough, I think that's the first time I've heard that one.
No, it's not.
Have you ever heard someone say Chris appeared before?
I don't think I have. I'm not sure.
I think it's less it's the first time you heard it, more like you mentally blocked it out.
That might be true.
Now you stuck with it.
Forever.
I thought I outlived it, but no, it's back with a vengeance.
You'll be forever Chris appearing.
Oh, my Lord. So we are back. The show is continuing. Again, thanks to Beatty and to George for coming on chatting about Luna. That was a really fun chat. Going to have to check that out in February. That looks really good.
I'm so looking forward to it. I finished it, the demo.
Oh, you finished the demo? What'd you think of it?
Am I allowed to say? I assume since it's a demo, there's no.
It's a demo. I mean, we didn't sign any NDAs that you're not allowed to talk about a demo.
I am so overwhelmingly terrified of embargoes at this point in my life.
Well,
I don't talk about games at all.
Mm. Say, isn't that the point of the demo? Is to get the word out?
I suppose so, but that doesn't mean it stops me from being fucking terrified.
Can you imagine some developer being like, you know what? We trusted you to play this demo and keep it hush hush.
I have played betas with NDAs before.
Yeah, but that's a beta, not a demo. A beta is a beta. It's a beta
demo.
Oh, so now you guys are hitting me that word.
It's just freely available on Steam.
Yeah, but it says that it's like a beta when you install it.
Yeah, man, Magic was a gamma. Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's not the complete game. And I've played, you know, betas and demos. What was it? Fable Legends. That one you had to sign an NDA for.
Yeah, and that one lasted forever, and then it didn't release.
Yeah. And then, like, if you took a screenshot or a video, it would plaster your gamer tag all over it so that they knew who to bust. So you are not allowed to share that one at all.
they don't fuck around with some demos and betas. No. They really crack down on that stuff.
I really am just terrified. Like, there are games, what was it, Hovership Havoc, that I had for like 3 months.
It wasn't that long.
No, it really was about, it was like six weeks ago, wasn't it? It was
close to 2 months, yeah.
Yeah, and so like, I was like, I don't know if I can even say I have this game, let alone, I shut that cookie operation down. Nobody knew I had shit. It's terrifying. Like, if you break embargo, then fucks the show. And I don't want to do that. But since it's a free demo and everything, I'm going to venture to say it's probably okay. No, I loved it. It's point and click. And it's beautiful art style, beautiful soundtrack. It was one of those games you just get lost in the moment with. And I can't wait to play the whole thing. I've been looking forward to Luna for over a year.
Damn.
Yeah. So I've been following him on Twitter. I watch everything that comes out about it. I'm like, give.
Give me more.
I've always been more of an Artemis guy myself, but.
Terrible.
I know. But I had to. It was just sitting there. It was such low hanging fruit.
Like everything else on this show.
That's why we get along so well.
Oh, we have problems.
Growing up in the hollow together, you know. This
holler. When you holla at somebody, it's something completely different. And you live in a holler.
I ain't no holla dweller. Ain't no holla dweller. Singing songs that don't make no sense as I play a game that's on my Switch.
Is it on the Switch?
It probably is.
Everything is on the Switch.
In hell. Where it needs to be. Where it belongs. Love me the Switch. Though me I too. Genuinely... It's such a good machine, though I do genuinely wonder what's going to happen in the grand scheme of things once, you know, the next systems come out. Are people going to start kicking to the side because it's not next gen enough, or is it going to be able to run on its own merits? I think the portability
of it will save it.
I sure hope so.
This I think if it weren't for the fact that it's so portable, then people would just be like, yeah. I mean, there's still hardcore fans who run around with, well, fuck, my kids still have a regular DS, let alone a 3DS, but you know, I mean, there's plenty of people who hang on to that portability factor. And
I mean, admittedly, I'd still be playing my 3DS and my DS if it weren't for a matter of, like, you know, limited time and, you know, so much on every machine, because I still have a number of games on my 3DS. I'm like, I would totally get down with that. It's still good. It's still fun. Like, they just released that Puzzles and Dragons Gold game on the Switch, and I'm like, I miss Puzzles and Dragons Super Mario Brothers Edition. I wonder if that's still fun.
You know, man, my kid was in there playing,
Super Blarnio Brothers.
No. The one that was based on the Food Network cooking show that was
Chopped.
Oh, Cooking Rants.
No, it had Mark Dacascos as the host.
Deal or No Deal.
No.
That's Super Salad?
Are you smarter than a fifth grader?
You guys are terrible.
I love Super Salad. It's such a great show.
Food Network shows. Get the fuck out of here.
For the record, I always choose soup because why the hell not? It's soup.
I just want Cutthroat Kitchen back. I miss that show.
Wait, that was a show?
Hell yeah, that's pretty good.
There's a game I have called Cutthroat Caverns. Now I want to see what this Cutthroat Kitchen is all about. Maybe they play Cutthroat Caverns. Like, you know, what if we took the caverns and put some ingredients on the table and just
bad things. What I like about Cutthroat Kitchen is that bad things happen on that show.
Yes.
Bad things and what would like people actually get hurt while cooking somehow?
That actually did happen one episode at least, yes. But I mean, like, just the rules of the show are such that people just do all these culinary crimes and they have to.
Iron Chef America. That's what it is. My kids have a game for that on their DS. Lord. And number 3 was playing it recently. I was like, you just got a Switch with Pokemon. What are you doing? She's like, yeah.
Hey, cook. Hey, don't hate on it now. I mean, it sounds bad until they start cooking dinner and you don't have to worry about it. And I was like, Mom, I know you're tired. I took care of you. I
Number 1 is 16 and she rolls. Like, there's days where I can't get off the couch because I have fuck tons of diseases that are horrible. And like, she'll just come bebopping through here and be like, hey, I made dinner. Don't worry about it. Okay.
But then the slave game will teach labor. Her how to make delicious dinners. Like, it won't just be,
She's pretty good. She's a better baker, though. She's okay with cooking, but she's a better baker. Like, she can bake cakes and shit. No. But that's more of an experience issue. Because, like, I know flavor profiles. She knows put eggs in it.
She knows Facebook profiles. Yeah, but soon...
She's getting there, but I mean, she can, you know, that's one thing. I'm going to be a little gross for things. That's one thing they don't tell you. Like they're all like, girls are terrible. They start PMSing and I hate everybody. Bitch, nobody told me that having a house full of PMSing girls meant they were going to make me brownies all the time. I'm down for this.
Yes. Actually, I could not be down for that. That would kill me. The temptation would be way too damn strong. It would kill me. Literally kill me.
Oh, you would love it, Purnell.
It would be a delicious way to go. I'm not lying to myself here, but it would kill me because, God, I'm suffering already. I got like Hershey Kisses from Christmas, Krabby Patties from Halloween. I'm just sitting on stuff that I can't eat, but I want to because it's all so good. It's like, yeah, it's not right, man. It's just not.
Just do it. Make yourself happy, Purnell.
No, it's never about that.
Do it.
Progress is about never being happy. It's only about work and frustration and blazing nipples.
See, I can't do that because my life's miserable enough with a mountain of diseases that if I want to eat a fucking cupcake, everybody else can get fucked and have to deal with the fact that I'm fat. I'm eating a cupcake.
Oh, no, no. Don't get me wrong. I'm eating my stuff. But there's a cupcake, which I could do. And then there's 2 boxes of Girl Scout cookies, which I could also do. But I also know damn well not to do it because, God, those things are delicious. And they're so evil. They put 4 cookies on there as a serving. Kiss my ass. No one's eating 4 cookies. No one ever eats 4 cookies. And if you come on here and say you do, you're lying to yourself and you suck. Because no one does.
The box isn't the serving?
The box is the serving. They just don't print it that way because they're liars. Like, just to get you in the door. It's like they have some balls, 170 calories. The serving? 2 cookies? That ain't shit. Nobody's eating 2 cookies. No one opens the box, rips open the plastic, slides out the tray to take 2 cookies out. My ass. No one's doing that. No one's doing it. And if they say they are, they're lying. No other way around it. And
I ain't taking no Girl Scout cookies out. I don't like them.
I love that this.
How? How do you know?
I just don't like them. Like, I don't see what's so special about them that you can't get normal
they're cookies.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I'm not a cookie person. I straight up.
Oh,
like,
then your opinion doesn't matter.
I can do without cookies and be like, yeah, that's fine.
That's like me saying I hate French onion soup when I don't like onions. Like, well,
I don't like onions. I do like French onion soup, though.
So you're confusing me.
That's legit.
No. She's I'm not a picky person
with a lot of food. So,
if it's proper onion soup, then you aren't really eating onions. You're eating like barely congealed goo that used to be onions. Like, but it's caramelized.
It's goo.
Yeah. But
the flavor of onions are great. I just can't do the texture of them.
Yeah. Yeah. There should be no crunch whatsoever in an onion soup. So and it's usually the crunch like that. And that is what makes them bitter. So like if they're crunchy and bitter, that's like the bad onion. And then the good onion is the caramelized goopy one.
Mm-hmm. Break down them sugars.
I like them both, but I know that there's a difference.
I mean, I will admit, much of my dislike for onions is texture, which is why I think I can eat onion powder. But even still,
but like dried onions?
Come off the conversation of I'm not a cookie person, hence why I don't like Girl Scout cookies, followed by I don't like onions. Oh, but I love French onion soup. It's in the name of the soup. I mean,
I like cookie dough ice cream. But I don't like cookies. Like once you bake it, it loses its allure.
You're confusing me. I feel like if I had to compile your kitchen with stuff you'd eat, I'd lose my shit because there's
I do have a lot of really weird like texture aversions and stuff. But
and I'm saying that as a guy,
I'm the kind of person I'm the kind of person who like a snack for me is like a spinach salad. Give me that shit. And I don't know why I'm fat because I eat like that far more than I eat like chips and cookies and stuff. Wait, it's
called salad form now?
Huh?
Spinach comes in salad form now?
You can get spinach put into a salad. Yes, you can.
It's
eat
more like salad. It comes in spinach form, not spinach coming in salad form.
Makes more sense.
I just grow. I put spinach seeds in the ground in a pot, and they grow. And then I cut them, and I wash them, and put them in a salad. And it's like, hey, salad.
Like I expect to hear something like, "Here's a salad. There's spinach in it. Nah, here's this spinach salad."
No, because like I don't bother putting lettuce. Iceberg lettuce is just water in a placeholder.
Yeah,
I don't even grow it. I'm like, fuck that shit. Get that out of here. Give me some spinach. Give me some arugula.
I mean, I get that too. I mean, I don't do iceberg, but I'll do romaine. I'll do spinach. I'll do spring mix, but I don't call it
that's beginner salad.
Yeah, but no one calls it spring mix salad. No one even calls it iceberg salad. The salad is everything. The lettuce is just the bed. It's just what you're sleeping on.
The salad.
Rubier said that you thought spinach came in a can.
Like Popeye.
I thought it gave me super strength.
When I was a kid, like that would be a snack for me. I would eat spinach fried and then cover it in vinegar.
I eat a can of spinach and my parents would have to yank me off the tree because I just run up that bad boy. I don't know what to do with my own strength.
I love it. Like I love spinach and I would eat that shit until I puked if I could.
Yeah, for good reason, because that's just
What a salad is it's a bowl of something that you try to recreate on a fork.
Crazy enough to work.
I grow the baby spinach, and so like it cups all the ingredients perfectly. It's nice and crisp when it's all fresh. You get that shit out the store, and it's in a bag, and it's like half-ass wilted, and you're like, ugh. That's why people don't like greens. Like, if you grew them in a pot, just take a pot on your porch, stick some seeds in it, walk away, come back.
They hate them because it's work.
But you don't have to. Like, with greens, it's just like, open the seed pouch, dump it in, and leave them alone for 2 months, and then come back and be like, oh, look, greens.
This is some magic you're talking about here.
My garden, look, I'm the kind of person who gardens with neglect. If I have to put work into it, I'm not growing it.
You realize you just coined a whole catchphrase there. Gardening with regret, with neglect, rather. You should just have yourself a seminar that you host. All right, my name's Cole, and I'm here to talk about gardening with neglect.
You think gardening's difficult?
I'm here to teach you about how you can plant seeds and abandon them to the wilderness. What happens to them? You don't give a shit. You're just here to eat later.
I've done that. I had a seed bed. I had planted all my other stuff. I'm really careful about planting out my garden and putting shit where I want it specifically, like to make sure that I grow enough for us. And then if I've got any leftover space or seeds, I just throw them together and see what comes up. It's a neglect garden.
A neglect garden.
My husband just thinks it's hilarious that I do it, but I'm like, it's just a neglect garden. It's whatever volunteers to come up comes up.
Hey, whatever
works.
The secret
ingredient is abandonment.
And it's like, I don't put any effort into, I mean, my whole garden. This year I'm going to do a no-dig garden, and I'm actually going to grow everything in straw bales. I'm not even going to dig. I'm just going to put out straw bales. You take 2 weeks, and you put, like, nitrogen on it and water it every day, and you put nitrogen every other day, and then it starts the composting inside the bale, and then you just go back after 2 weeks and, like, pop your seed down in it and walk away.
Welcome back to Gardening Tips with the SML.
Yeah, that's what this show is about,
the SML,
right?
Yeah. Gardening Tips.
I tangents. You know it's going to be a tangent with us.
Oh, my but, Lord.
Yeah, like, let the chickens deal with it. Throw it out there and let the chickens deal with it.
All right, so should we get to some game reviews? We got some games to talk about.
I sure hope one of them is Harvest Moon, because holy cow.
Unfortunately, no, but there are some good games to talk about. Let's start things off with Psycheo Shooting Stars Alpha, developed by Psycheo and City Connection, published by NIS America, released January 21st on the Switch for $39.99. The arcade strikes back with a collection of 6 white-knuckle shoot-em-up classics from Psycheo's greatest hits. Chris, tell us about Shooting Stars Alpha.
Oh, boy. It's published by Miss America?
Yes.
There she is.
NIS. I know. I say NIS America.
Oh, NIS America. Okay. Yes.
There she is. NIS America.
Yeah, question there for a second.
I knew it was NIS America, too. I just completely misheard you and believed it. Okay, Psycheo Shooting Alpha. Wow, this is a... This is a collection I was really excited about. In fact, I was just about to pre-order it when I was told I'd be reviewing it. So that's great.
You're welcome, Nis.
Yeah. Wait, did you say Miss? Just kidding. Crap. I'm actually like on the game right now because I'm looking at it. Anyways. Okay. So as y'all know, Psycheo is a company that all across the 90s and 2000s like put out just lots and lots of really good vertical shooters, mostly vertical. And you know, their best known properties, of course, are the Strikers 1945 series and Gunbird, and you know, they have some other really, really, really ridiculous ones too, which, you know, I'll get into another time, I suppose. So, yeah, this is a collection of 6 of their games. So included in this one are the entire Strikers 1945 trilogy, which, yes, they do that thing where they do Strikers 1945, 1945 2, and 1945 3, instead of Capcom's thing where they just, you know, make the year go up.
Yeah.
In fact, I feel like that's how it started. But anyways... so that's kind of like the main meat of the thing. So we can talk about those for a little bit. So the Strikers 1945 series is a, like I said, it's a vertical shooter. The first couple of them at least, utilize that kind of, that sort of rendered, 2D sort of looking like 3D look. Like if you think of something like, the original Mortal Kombat or, you know, Primal Rage or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing of the time. And the basic storyline, and I actually had to read elsewhere about this because the games notoriously don't have storylines in the games, just a little bit of an intro. Apparently, you know, it's World War II and some alien thing invades and starts sending down these like hyper, you know, futurist, you know, like really advanced machinery to come down and kill everybody. So the Allies and the Axis of Evil actually team up to take them down. So you get to like, you know, you get to like fly ships that are based on World War II fighters. And of course, like I said, it all proceeds like a like, you know, vertical shmup would, you know, you power yourself up and shoot endless bullets at, you know, one ship versus a million and, you know, fight increasingly harder bosses. And actually, with this series and most Psycho shooters, the first several stages are actually randomized. And then, you know, you play through a set of like final levels. And the difference really, I mean, Psycho, or sorry, 1945 versus 1945-2. 1945-2 adds a little bit of a different set of ships. And I actually, I reviewed this one by itself before and gave it a very good marks, not least for the fact that two of the ships that you get to fly as, and I only assume that they're good guys, is the Flying Pancake. And it actually does look like a bit of a pancake.
But is it wet?
You know, I don't know. The game doesn't say, but
you unlock that one.
It has to be, yeah. And then the other one is the TA-152 Fock Wolf.
Nice.
Which is
a little close on the nose there.
Really close on that one.
Listen, Fock Wolf.
Exactly. It's a great insult. And it shoots like laser bombs. I don't know where in World War II that happened, but anyways. And then 1945-3 is exclusive to this collection. And so this is the only way that you're going to get to play this, because they did not release this independently of the set. It's the only game in the set that you can't buy separately.
Interesting.
Yes. And so what they've added to this one, well, it's been a few years, so the graphics are much updated. They're much shinier. They look more like PlayStation 2 or newer. Also, the game is just noticeably harder, even on the easiest difficulty. Well, okay. Psycho has in their home ports, they have the infamous difficulty system, which is like, I think it's like 8 different difficulties, but it does the easy, normal, hard, and then like very hard and extreme. And then on the easy side, it goes easy, very easy, child, and monkey. So in 1945-3, they actually only just have it at the original 4 difficulty levels. So the easiest it gets is easy. Having said that, easy level, as soon as you start the game, it just starts filling up with bullets. Like, you actually really have to try on this one.
Wow.
Yeah. And of course, with all these games, they give you great quality of life options, including infinite continues, so you can just rich kid strat your way through any of these games.
Sweet.
Yeah, I don't think any of them really are going to hold you back. You know, you can do different things, like all of the games except 2 of them have what I guess is now called Tate mode, which is where it will flip the screen for you, so that, you know, instead of doing only 1/3 of the screen in the middle, because that's the way these games were programmed, you can actually turn your Switch to the side, or use a flip grip, or put it on a TV and flip the TV over and, like, you know, utilize the full screen.
Yeah, flip grip.
Yeah, flip grips are amazing. Which, you know, I wish I could do a flip grip and pro controller type setup. I just need a spinning TV. That's all I need.
Yeah.
Anyways, so that's those games.
What else is in there? Like, I know you said there's 6 games. What else is there?
Yeah. Okay. So this is where it gets interesting. One of the games of the remaining 3 is Dragon Blaze, which I've covered before. It is a vertical shooter, except it's put in a fantastical high fantasy world, and you're actually flying dragons around and shooting, and it actually does have a storyline. So every character that you pick has a different, a lot like Gunbird. It has, you know, each character has like little dialogues that they do between stages, and, you know, finally they have an ending story, which ends in a bit of a cinematic. Some of them are funny, some of them are touching. It's a lot more of a bullet hell type of game. Like, even the bullets, instead of being bright orange, are like purple, and, like, you know, actually more filling up the screen kind of thing, instead of just going really fast. Usually the mark of a bullet hell is that the bullets are a little slower, but there's a lot more of them. It's one of my favorite shooters ever. So I've reviewed it before, gave it really high marks. It's here exactly as it was on the other thing. Great for flying dragons. Okay. That's all I need to say about that one. It's there. Soul Divide is on this one. Soul Divide Sword of Darkness, which is contentious AF. This is a game that some people Some people really like this one, and some people absolutely hate it in the Psycho canon. It is completely different from anything else they've put out, as far as I know. So Soul Divide is still a shooter, but you choose from one of three mystical characters. This is another high fantasy setting type thing. You're trying to defeat an evil wizard, keep him from turning into a demon and destroying the world, etc. But the three characters that you pick, it gets you into the game, and it actually, you have a large, like, actual character sprite. Again, in rendered graphics, such as the original Mortal Kombat, you know, Primal Rage, all that. And the screen fills up with enemies that are similar size to you, and you can either shoot them, or you can run up and use your melee weapon. You have free floating control over the screen, again, because it's like a shmup. You get actual experience points, spells, and all this other stuff through enemy drops, rather than like straight up levels. And then you have to fight a boss at the end that might be like a giant dragon or something. It takes up like half the screen. You can take multiple hits in this game and restore your life. So it's not like a one hit, you know, debt equals death kind of thing. And then, you know, once the stage is done, you actually choose from a branching path that will change the story somewhat. It's a little bit like Darius in that sense, or maybe a Castlevania 3 or something. But anyways, the thing about this game is that the action is a little odd if you're used to shooters, and even odder if you're not. It also, like I said, it relies on, you know, balancing kind of shooting and running up and slashing enemies. Meanwhile, they're throwing bullets out that you can't really dodge because the hitbox is the entire sprite of your character. Oh. So that's the old Silver Surfer curse. So anything that hits you, you will take a hit. So sometimes it's more about mitigating damage than it is about, you know, just straight up dodging, because the game does get really intense. But, you know, with the quality of life stuff, you can still blaze through it. But it's just, and it's also a side scroller rather than a vertical game. So therefore, there's no Tate mode because it already takes up the whole screen. It's really, really interesting. But, you know, I can definitely see why they only really seem to have made one game in this style. And then finally, they've got Zero Gunner 2, which is, I think, the newest of these in terms of, like, its place in development. It's fully 3D, and this time you're fighting with helicopters instead of airplanes, and that is immediately apparent by the fact that you have to manually turn the vehicle in order to shoot in different directions. So you're not just flying back and forth, shooting straight up, or going side to side. You actually, you fly the helicopter, and then you push you hold down the A button in order to pivot, like to actually turn on a dime, and then use the other button to shoot. And thus, enemies come at you from all directions, and you have to be able to, like, actually turn to meet them. And then, of course, if you don't turn, then you're just strafing, and then you may or may not hit them. And, this is another one that does not pull its punches. So, you know, you might spend a few continues, like, just learning the mechanics here. But it actually is a really interesting game. I'm, like with Soul Divide, I'm glad that this isn't all the collection offers, because it's a kind of frustrating game, by itself. But I think in the greater context, it's a really interesting, like, take on the whole thing. But it's more like, and the action is kind of vertical, but it's more like isometric in that sense. So you're just kind of going all over the map, really. So all six of these on one collection, and they have another collection that also includes the Gunbird games.
Yeah, that'll be coming, I think, later in February, I believe.
Yeah, really looking forward to that one, too.
But $40 for Shooting Stars Alpha, what do you say?
$40, this is a great deal. These games are, I think, $10 or more a pop, like normally, right? Something like that.
I think some of them might be $7.99. Even still, you're getting a deal.
Yeah, you really are. I mean, mathematically, you're getting a deal. And, of course, Strikers 1945-3, which I think is, Flying Pancakes notwithstanding, I think this 45-3 is actually the best of the bunch. And of course, you get, you know, the great, great Dragon Blaze, and you get to try Zero Gunner 2 and Soul Divide and decide if you like him instead of buying him separately. Plus, NIS has a physical edition that has some extras in it, which is, you know, on their website, and that seems really cool. I love NIS collector's editions. I've collected a few of them now.
Yeah, they're addictive.
Yeah, that my shelf is suffering.
I need to get more of theirs.
I know, me too. But yeah, this is like most things that they put out. This is a grand collection. I predict it might be a little overshadowed by Bravo, but that's okay. You should just get them both.
Awesome.
As a shooter fan, I love it. So.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Warhammer Quest II: The End Times, developed by Perchang, published by Chilled Mouse. It released December 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $29.99. In Warhammer Quest II: The End Times, you will lead your group of brave warriors across a war-torn land and into dungeons for wealth and glory. Swing swords, fire arrows, cast spells as you fight through the denizens of chaos that threaten the Warhammer world. Purnell, tell us about Warhammer Quest II.
Warhammer Quest 2 is an interesting little game where I expected it to be more of a sort of epic-y adventure in the Warhammer universe, you know, Warhammer Quest. But what I actually got was less of that, though I think they intended for it to be, and more of a sort of pick-up-and-play tactical game, which honestly fits the bill for me just fine. So the idea is that the game starts out, you control two characters, being a dark elf sorceress and a knight captain. And the way the game works is they give you a default quest to start the game off, being you need to go investigate this location, which leads you to your first dungeon. And when you go inside, the gameplay is done on a top-down, like completely top-down, no isometric anything, view of the game. And the way it works is that you go from room to room, maneuvering your characters on grids by, you know, basically using allocated action points to walk them around. And you can go from room to room, attacking monsters as you see them. They come in, you mop the floor with them. And once you've beaten them, you keep pressing forward through the dungeon until you ultimately reach the end, where it's usually a number of tiles that you have to get your units to stand on for the game to consider you have beaten the level. Now, unlike a lot of games that have these sorts of like exploration mechanics, there are no treasure chests to open on the dungeons or anything like that. It's just killing the monsters and getting to the end. Once you get to the end of the level, however, though, you do get treasure in the form of loot displayed as cards, which I actually kind of like. It's basically almost like saying like you open a pack of cards, essentially, and those cards are gold coins, treasure that's worth money, equipment for your characters, abilities for your characters, because that's also how this game works. You don't like necessarily gain skills through leveling up. You typically gain skills by either buying them or acquiring them as rewards from quests. And then you equip those things on characters as if they were items. And the game has 15 different classes, and different skills and equipment items are locked to the different races or classes that you are playing as. So you might get a sword that's only good for war dancers, or you might find a spell that's only good for sorceresses. So basically, you'll want to take advantage of that and use the skills and items appropriately. Characters are also kind of in this vein. You find them typically as results from beating quests, through them, say, joining your party as a recruit, or as just a random reward. You might finish a quest and they flip the cards over, and one of your rewards is some dude you just met in pants, and he's wearing them very well. and then you'll just bring him on and he just hangs out with you. Like, he doesn't really have a personality or an identity. He's just a dude to hang out with you, and that's fine. But the interesting thing about this game, at least from my experience, is that money comes as being kind of scarce. What that means is that you'll be doing a lot of like random skirmish quests in this game, with the intent being to gain money or items which you'll then sell for the purpose of getting money to buy equipment at the various shops that exist in the different towns in the game. Now, towns aren't, you know, walk around affairs. And it's literally you move a cursor to a town on the map. The town kind of spins up like a sort of diorama, and you can choose one of the locations on the map of the town to engage. It might be a quest that you can unlock for the next to progress further into the main game, or you might find a store where you can use to buy things. There's another place you can go to kind of spend money, with the intent being to gain experience points for your characters just outright. And you can spend money also to just flat out level up your characters, because even though you earn experience from fighting monsters and dungeons, you don't actually level up proper until, like traditional D&D rules, you sleep at an inn and get your experience accrum, you know, added to your character's overall pool, thus leveling them up. So you'll be primarily doing that with all the towns. There's no like deep exploration or anything involved with them. It's solely going there to get stuff done and moving on. In fact, the entire game is pretty much that, which is why I felt like it wasn't so much of an epic, so much as just a thing you do for fun. Like, it's core tactical adventure gameplay. And honestly, I have no fault with that. I look at it as I boot it up, I get a mission done, I get that one more round feel sometimes where I'm like, okay, I can get one or two more in, just another dungeon or two real quick, just to knock them out and get some experience and level up my guys, or I'll just put it down. And that's fun. Like, I was enjoying it the entire time I played it, though I wish the music didn't suck, because it really sucks. It is pretty much like two loops of music. The, ooh, you're in a creepy dungeon tune, and then when monsters show up, it's a doop, 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 tune. That gets really old and very fast. It sucks. But, of course, there's no harm in just turning the music down, watching some F is for Family, and just playing it silently, which is not my usual go-to, but it actually ended up working pretty well for this game. All in all, though, I mean, I feel as though the game is enjoyable. It's hard to say necessarily buy it above the cornucopia of other like different tactical RPGs that exist on the system, but one thing that this does have going for it compared to pretty much any other one is that the battles can go fairly quickly, which means this is truly a pick up and play, get a battle done while you're on the can and then put it down and come back later sort of feel to it.
So it seems like this feels at home on the Switch.
Yes, very much so. This is definitely the kind of game I can see booting up for a quick break. Like if I'm at work, I only get a 10-minute break. I can squeeze a battle in real quick and level some guys up and come back and play it later. Whereas if I were to say play like God Wars or something, which is also a great game on the Switch, I'm not beating any battles in 10 minutes on that game unless I'm just rushing, which means I'll die. So, yeah. No.
Well, as it stands, $30 on Warhammer Quest 2. What do you think?
I think if you want a quick play for battles, I think it's a decent buy. Otherwise, it's a try. But suffice to say, I had a good time with it, and I think you may too. Just don't come in expecting a graphic opus with excellent orchestral music to guide you along, because you ain't getting that shit, but you will get a fun time.
You'll have a fun time, but bring your own soundtrack.
Exactly.
Awesome. We'll keep the role-playing going with the next game, Seek Hearts, developed by Xcreate, published by Chemco, released January 16th on the Switch for $14.99. With questions swirling in his mind about why he was created and by who, Aizen sets out on a journey to discover his origins. However, as he and those with him pursue answers to this mystery, they fail to notice a shadow creeping up upon them with the intent to stop them in their tracks. Chris, tell us about Seek Hearts.
All right, Seek Hearts. Well, for one of those shadows that has shown up is a dude with a giant red mullet, and I love it. Took me right back to the 90s. And, like, it's, like, truly a mullet. Like, you can see from the back, it's, like, spiked up, like, until the bottom part, which is just, like, long, like, 3 feet long. It's just, like, Joe Dirt level epics. Wow. Of mullets. Wow. So that's the bad guys you're contending with. Yes, so Seek Hearts. I just unplugged my own headphones. Hang on here.
I'm so proud of you.
I know, I'm so good at this. I've been podcasting with you for years now. Anyways, so yeah, Seek Hearts is the newest, quote, question marks, sort of mobile to console port from Chemco and Xcreate, who, you know, like I said, they all tend to make different flavors of RPGs. You know, Chemco works with Xcreate and Hitpoint, and of the Xcreate ones, we have the 8-bit throwback ones. We have the occasional, like, 3D one that I actually have yet to review very many of. I think I did one on Steam a while ago. And then these ones, which are kind of a bit of a 32-bit sort of thing, like really well detailed and things like that, but they all do kind of look like they came from the same mold. And, you know, this one's kind of no exception in that sense. I always make fun of the fact that, or like it always just makes me laugh privately when I turn on the game and it has the same the same stuff happens in the intro where it's like, you know, it's doing this crawl across the world map, and then the text appears and like talks about the world a little bit. And then you end up in the protagonist's bedroom, and then he talks to the lady who's always the second character, you know, things like that. It's like there's such specific things that happen. I will say I like that this game broke it a little bit by having the hero get flung into a house as the as his introduction.
Yeah.
So that's one good thing. So yeah, you're and actually they did a few things differently in this one. So at least story wise, your hero in this game is a robot. A very human like robot called Aizen or Izen, whatever. There's no voice acting, so I don't know. And he is a robot who kind of came to this small town and ended up as its protector. And this little girl like became friends with him, and he kind of, you know, was her big brother figure as she grew up. And then she became like extremely strong, like unnaturally strong. So she's, you know, the second character whose name is in the menu so that I don't forget it.
Crap. Wow. Sounds yeah. like me over there.
I know. Clara is her name. And, yeah, she's like, yeah, she's like seriously your strong arm in the game. She somehow got stronger than her robot big brother and like can move boulders and stuff. And, so that's- they both, yeah. And, and that actually comes into play. Like this game, like, you know, some of the As Divine games and of the others of this ilk, Antiquia Lost, of course, which is my kind of perennial favorite. It's one of the first ones I really got drawn to in this series. You know, they have you switch main characters to do different tasks, and hers is actually moving boulders and like breaking down doors and stuff. So they go on this adventure to find out who he is, because this is a world where robots exist and also fairies. They tell you that in the beginning text crawl, and fairies do enter into this. And the robots, mechanoids, as they're called in the game, are actually like humanoid, but there's a difference. You know, they speak in that, in the Zanga style of alternating capital and small letters, like the bad guy in Dragon Sinker, which I mentioned last week.
Yeah.
All the robots in here speak like that, except for this guy who seems to be, to all appearances, a normal human, but made of iron. So they're trying to figure out what is so special about this guy, and they're accessing ancient, you know, ancient future technology, you know how it goes. And, you know, they run across a girl called Luca, who is an alchemist, sort of mad scientist type of character, who willingly turned herself into a monster that looks kind of like a poodle with seaweed for hair. So, and like, that's her preferred way of being. Like, that's not even a one of those things where, oh, I accidentally did this to myself. She's like, no, I did this on purpose. Like, and she's quite a character. So she kind of serves as like the healer of the group and things like that. And then of course the suspicious lone wolf kind of older guy character in Gantz is another one that you find. And yeah, so like it's basically all about the journey of finding out who this hero is and finding out that there are others like him, but they are actually mostly all evil. And one of them has a really rad mullet. And on your way, you get to fight through this world that is like a typical Kimco X Create RPG in the sense that there's forests and mountains and caves and stuff like that. But then there's the occasional abandoned futuristic like factory and things like that. So they're shaking it up a little bit on the backgrounds, and I appreciate that. The menu is a mess. I just have to put that out of the way. The first time you look at the menu, you're going to be like, what the hell is this? It's
a lot
not
of
Kimco
RPGs are like that, though.
Yeah, but this one especially, because it's got this mechanical-looking background, and then it's got 10 options right in your face. And every time you look at a character, there's three different pictures of the character on the screen at the same time. There's their face, their realistic portrait, and their sprite portrait, like always. And I don't know. It's just – it's funny to me. It's not bad. It's just funny. So this game, of course, like all the Kimco X Create RPGs, this one is all about what all is going on, the functionality, what's under the hood. That's always the main point of interest here. And this one has some wild ones. So, of course, a lot of the newer As Divine, Antiquia-style, like, Chemco RPGs have this thing where you can strengthen your weapons by having them eat the other weapons that you come across in the game, mm-hmm. which is kind of nice. In this game, they've actually done away with that, but you can use extraneous weapons, which, by the way, drop at an alarming rate. Like, almost every enemy in every fight like will drop some kind of weapon. You actually feed them to your hero. Aizen actually eats them himself, and they just increase his stats. You get to choose which stats you want to level up, and literally every stat that he has its own level, as well as his overarching level, as well as any other stat-increasing permanent items that you want to give to him, which are numerous. So, all kinds of character building in this one, but they actually, like Antiquia Lost, they gave all of the absorbing items to make himself stronger to one character. But in Antiquia Lost, it's interestingly not the main character. In this one, it is. it's got the shop, of course, where you can do your gambling, which is my favorite part. As soon as you save up enough lottery tickets, of which there are two different kinds, or quartz crystals, or coins, which I believe are from the Colosseum, which is another staple of the Chemco X Create RPG ilk. You can then use those to gamble for better items. Fortunately, since this is a few years after Dragon Sinker, the items, you know, the ones that you get with lottery tickets, which are the ones you're most likely to win, are just going to be a little better than what you have. They're not going to be game-breaking final stage weapons. And you can get much better items if you use your crystals, but those crystals can also be used to purchase items in the game, which, again, none of them are particularly game-breaking, which is very nice. It's nice that you can't just, you know, gamble your way to total winning. and, of course, it does have a variable difficulty, which ranges from, like, it's easy, normal, and hard, and they really mean it. Like, the easy is super easy and the hard is super hard, so you know, there's definitely a difficulty level for any player here. Then they have this one system, and I have to go over this one. It's Antiquia, As Divine, all those, they all have the gardening system, which I've mentioned before is already a little odd. You know, there'd be these pots that you would plant seeds into that you could either use the seed to boost your stat by 1 point, or you could plant it and wait some real world time to harvest it into fruit, which gives you much more of a stat boost. And, you know, it's definitely more in your interest to do that. And you have those limited slots. So what this one has is stockings that are hung, three of them, above tables. And you set snacks on the tables, and when you do that, eventually, there's no real timer for it, there are fairies that appear above the tables in the stockings, and they leave you presents. But here's the other thing, is that when they're in there, you are meant to click the button on them and tickle them until they leave you a bonus item, as well as the gift.
I remember going over this when we covered it previously.
Yeah.
I thought that sounded familiar.
It is. Yeah, it's utterly bizarre, and I love that it's there. And I always do tickle those fairies. And then, of course, there's fairies that also join you in battle as equipable items. And they augment the skills that you gain as you level up. And, you know, you can, of course, sort of customize your character that way. I haven't gotten too deep into that one, but it did seem pretty interesting. The good thing about skills is that the game's a lot more economical about them now. It's like they tend to come a little more slowly and they're much more useful in battle. And weapon aspects are now different in that weapons no longer have, well, This ties into skills, because now instead of magic points, you have points that you get every turn, at the start of every turn, up to four. So I guess they're called like diodes or something like that, ion crystals, whatever they're calling them. And, you know, so every time, like, if you want to use skills, you actually have to wait or, you know, use your regular attacks while you're letting your skills build up. It's a lot like Octopath Traveler, which is, a game that is, that has very, very high marks indeed for its mechanics. And, so now you can choose to use a skill or you could choose to unlock a certain aspect of your weapon that's equipped that's not in there automatically. So, for instance, right now Clara has an axe that is a normal axe, but if you decide to unlock its characteristic by spending a point at the beginning of her turn, then it becomes an axe that for three turns will attack every enemy with a normal swing. Whereas prior games would just have a certain type of weapon that always did that. And, you know, then, of course, you would just collect those weapons because that's endlessly useful. But now the game actually makes you work for it a little bit more, which I really enjoy. So overall, this is a really interesting story with a more interesting setting than I think what we've been seeing lately from Kemco and XCreate. It's got, dare I say, possibly an overcomplicated system at this point, but it... After a few, a couple hours or so, like, you're just hanging with it. It's fine. You're still fighting enemies. It's got great QOL. It's got these beacons in the start of every dungeon that it's not just a warp point because you could just choose to warp out of the dungeon at any point, which is nice. But, you know, you can actually set the amount of encounters that you're going to face in the dungeon from there. But you have to beat the dungeon once before you can tell it to do no encounters. But, you know, once it does, then you can just, you know, run out of the cave if you like and go grab all the treasure if you missed it the first time. But you can also double and even triple your rate so that you can, like, run into enemies all the time. Or you could just tell it to send three enemies after you right then and there.
Yeah,
and you
can love that.
Yeah, exactly. It's great for grinding. And you can spend your crystals to make sure that they're the type of enemies that give you the bonus stuff. So it's almost like being able to summon metal slimes instead of regular slimes in Dragon Quest on a whim, which I really dig that. And I really, like, the thing that I most take away from Sea Carts is that I really like that they're starting to really throw in some balance to all of these, you know, quality of life things that they keep throwing in. So I'm actually really happy with this one, and I am looking forward to playing more of it.
Awesome. Then your overall verdict for $15?
Yeah, I think these games just keep getting better and better. That's almost always my verdict, unless they go backwards and release an older game again. But no, this is a case where they are making some real strides in the improvements. So I would definitely recommend this one. And if you're unfamiliar with Kemco XCreate RPGs, this would be a good one to start with because it's starting a whole new set of characters and a whole new, like, background sort of thing, for everything. So, you know, like, the Asdivine ones are a little confusing because there's, like, you know, 12 of them out there. So I think this one's a great one for people who are looking to get into these RPGs. So yeah, I give it a buy it.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got one more review we got to take care of, but we're waiting on Norg.
Oh, dear.
So I don't know if you guys want to stick around and wait for him or if...
I may not be able to because I'm fading from all the gym activities.
Pernell, you quitter?
I'm not a quitter. My body's a quitter. My brain's like, dude, you got time. My body's like, fuck you.
It might be supposed to make Patreon content if you're snoozing.
It might be from content comes before we start. When I'm at the most feisty.
Oh no.
Might be from me all describing that, all the things in Sea Carts.
See all that holo talk we did? You know, the delicious, delicious cupcake with Bob discussions, brownies, Girl Scout Mafia, my nipples. That's all Patreon content.
That's all the intro to the show.
The show.
Holy cow.
That's how much you talk that you forget what's part of the show and what isn't.
We give that quality away for free? Jesus, man.
Yeah, that's business. What we do on this show. We just give it up for free.
We have to pay viewers, but you know.
There you go. There's my nipples. There you go. Talk about those. That'll be your Patreon.
I was gonna say it's very it's very telling for this show that Blazing Nipples was mentioned and not expounded on. They're like, oh, whatever, that's fine.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's a normal thing.
Yeah.
It is, but I didn't know it existed until I experienced it. And I was like, what the fuck is this? It didn't make any sense to me.
And then runner's nipples and stuff where they get sore?
Yeah, like they're on fire. Like, they catch literal fire on your chest.
Yeah, like they make tape to go over your nipples while you work out so that you don't rub them raw.
But it's so mind-boggling. I mean, any other descriptive, any other time, nipples feel good. They're freaking sexual tools. It's like, hey, my nips feel good. Touch my nipples. That's great. And all of a sudden, one day, why do my nipples hurt? This is not how nipples are supposed to function. I was raised to believe these were sexy, fun time things or just something that just perks out embarrassingly when it got especially hot outside. And then one day, this shit happens.
Now you know what pregnancy nipples feel like.
We need pregnancy nipples. So every day when you're pregnant, it just feels like
those fuckers sticking hurt. Hot
pokers in your nipples?
Yes, those fuckers hurt. Because you get all swollen and it's just, ouch.
Yeesh. I tell you, boy, I'm not a religious man, but there's a lot of talk about, you know, like the human body is so complicated, well constructed. And then you think about shit like hot nipples. And then you have to wonder, what purpose does that serve anybody? What world did someone go, you know, as I start crafting these wonderful human bodies, you know what they need? Sensitive nipples that catch fire from sweat. It's just, it will save them from predators. It will give them ingenious, you know, epiphanies that will lead to the creation of such fantastic things. I was working in the lab the other day, was really stumped on this problem. And then when my left nipple started blazing up, it hit me.
I thought you were about to start the Monster Mash. You're starting that story exactly like that song goes.
It was a graveyard smash.
There you go.
My nipple hurts. And
on cue, George is here. George, how are you doing?
Like, I love the fact that it rings and I hit the button and the next thing I hear is hot nipples.
You knew you were in the place.
This is my kind of show. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. We bring the hot nipples. We bring
hot nipples, cave culture, and all that stuff. Oh yeah!
If it were if cave culture did not have hot nipples, I'd be sad.
Oh, did someone say hot cakes? I like hot cakes.
Delectable. Wait a minute, I don't think that's pancakes. That sounds much slurpier. Are you?
it's just wet.
Pancake noodles.
Pancake noodles.
That would be good, by the way.
Someone that's called funnel fries.
There you go.
Funnel fry? No one's ever eaten funnel fries like spaghetti or ramen. You gotta think bigger. You gotta think.
But that's what a pancake noodle essentially is.
Yeah, but that's not noodle enough. We need pancake noodles swirling in a syrupy broth, caked flavor. Don't go, that's delicious.
So now's the time where I say that I don't actually like pancakes.
Oh my God.
What? Is
this episode things Cole hates or something?
What?
Shit tonight.
I don't Cole's like
pancakes. I just hate sugar.
Are you fist fucking kidding me?
I would not fist fuck you in a kidding way.
Wait, here's a question. Do you like waffles?
Well then.
I do like waffles. Waffles are, I don't love them, but if I had to choose between the two, I would take waffles over pancakes every day.
You're okay then. You're back on the winning team. Waffles
to,
are the
to be fair, I just particularly food. Don't like breakfast foods.
Oh, dear God.
Like the rare.
Now, hold on a minute
what
here.
What are you doing here, man?
Fucking hate cereal.
Okay, I'm with you on that. I'm not down with cereal either.
What about sausages?
So if I'm going to eat breakfast, I would rather it be like sausage and gravy and biscuits or bacon and gravy.
I'm with you. You're good. We're good.
But beyond that, just it needs to fuck off.
French toast.
French toast is okay in rare occasions.
Dude, you're taking a piece of bread and you're using it as the sponge it was designed to be, and then soaking egg and vanilla up and then cooking it. How could you possibly go wrong?
If I'm a texture guy too, then I like to go all out and do like cream cheese and caramel apple filling
whipped heavy ripping cream with a little bit of vanilla.
See, so, you've got some breakfast in you, and you're like, I hate breakfast, and then you're like, I'll make breakfast.
I will make.
She has good breakfast in her.
Yeah, that's like we have that. That's birthday breakfast or Christmas breakfast. That's not an everyday thing. Like, as far as everyday goes, I usually just eat leftovers from dinner for breakfast. I don't like breakfast food.
My Sunday tradition is omelets at the diner or pancakes at the diner, and it never ceases to make me feel good about consuming it. Like, it's the shit. And then pancakes, though I do prefer waffles over them. There are so many damn things people dig due to pancakes. Like, you could get some crazy shit on a pancake, and it works. You can get it in the pancake, between the pancakes.
I mean, I don't even know what the point is. The only reason to have pancake is as a vessel for eating butter. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And that's why waffles are better, and if because I was gonna eat they that, just I'd have just cups. Eat
cornbread.
Butter pockets, right.
Yes, butter cups.
I would argue a vessel of vessels for butter.
Yes.
I would argue cornbread is a better vessel for butter than pancakes.
I would agree.
I don't know about that.
I would agree with you on that, because if I'm eating a waffle or a pancake,
that's a redneck thing.
As much as I like butter, there are much better things that can take the space of that. Like, I'll get a stack of pancakes at a restaurant with all the cool toppings, and they're like, you want some butter? I'm like, why? It's just going to drown out the flavor of everything else on this motherfucker. Just give me the pancakes and all the crazy shit.
Yeah, butter, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, it's like, it's not that I just like butter, it's that there are so many things you can get on a pancake, the butter just kind of takes away from that at that point. It's like, I want everything else that's there. Give me all the
It's like
shit.
I don't even know you.
Come on, you know me, man, I'm Purnell.
I'm the hot nippleman. Butter.
Butter makes it better.
Pancake. No, butter. Fucking butter.
I'm not fucking butter, man. Are you kidding me? This is a great G show. No one's.
Yeah.
No, rated G, rather. No one's fucking butter here, okay?
Great G.
Don't talk about my kitten butter that way.
Oh God, that just took it even worse. Oh God, no.
Meow.
Hashtag save the kitties.
The SML podcast does not endorse bestiality, except for that one guy, but he got let go a couple months ago. He's
We're sorry about that one.
Did you ever hear that parody of Closer, where it was basically an entire theme to bestiality?
No, I haven't.
No.
It was great and it was awful. It's like the total hick voice guy, I don't fuck you like an animal, and it just goes on and on from I mean the words write themselves.
Meownimal.
Right.
Oh my no. Lord. Well said, we have one more review we should take care of before we wrap God. Up for the night.
Yay!
One final game to talk about, that is called Phoenix Point, developed and published by Snapshot Games. It released December 3rd on the Epic Game Store for $39.99. Also available on Windows 10 Store, and I believe it's on Xbox Game Pass as well.
Oh.
If I'm remembering correctly.
See, I thought it was an Epic exclusive, so I am misinformed.
Wait, I missed the name of the game. What is it?
Phoenix Point.
It might be on Game Pass.
I believe that's on Game Pass. Anyway,
I'll look. You go ahead. I'll let you know.
All right.
Phoenix Point puts the player in the midst of a desperate fight to take back the Earth from a mutating alien menace, featuring turn-based tactical combat and resource management on a global scale. Phoenix Point offers endless replayability and a brutal challenge. George, tell us about Phoenix Point.
It's a great alpha.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Man, I don't know what it is. Somehow, you've done a really good job recently of how should I put this? Shackling me with incomplete PC games. I think we're 3 for 3 now in PC games where this will be a great game someday.
For what it amounts to, I'm not finding it on Xbox. So
no, it's not on Xbox. It's on Windows 10.
Let me check that one.
I'm okay. Checking it is on the Windows or it is on the Game Pass app under PC. Okay. So yes, it is available on Windows 10 through Xbox Game Pass.
Okay. So
you meant it was on the console.
Let me go into why I was really excited that you hit me up for this one, because I played a ton of XCOM, like way back when I was in high school. And I even played the reboots that they released. I played them on like an iPad or something. And in spite of all that, it was a lot of fun. And it really kind of kicked in gear that whole strategy style combat game that I always really enjoyed. So I was really excited to get to dive into this. And you load up the game and the intro kicks in and it feels great. The whole concept was just awesome. And then you start the game and you go through the tutorial and the tutorial makes a whole lot of sense. And then the game actually starts. So, that's when it started kind of falling apart. So I'll go through my usual, the good, bad and ugly stuff. I'll start with good because the concept again was great. It feels like that style of game that there's plenty of stuff and technology to research, which is something you would expect. And it's great. There's so much lore to learn about the different factions, and the level of detail they went into was great. The voice acting was by and large pretty well done in this game.
You want to know what else is great?
What?
Root Beer is My Jam subbing to us on Twitch for the 9th month.
Snap. Dude.
He just made a Twitch baby. Money.
Fuck that, just
wow. Too real, man.
It's too late to leave it at the forest station now.
I haven't made that sound in a long time. Wow. I didn't know I still had that in me.
I'm proud of you.
You need to become a voice actor, because that's some...
Well...
Funny you mentioned that.
Okay. Excuse me, I'm going to go put this cork into my mouth, and I'm going to talk like this for the rest of the entire review.
So, are you telling me?
There's plenty of facts and research. Well, I can still say oil instead of oil. Say all. Paula Deen, I still love her in spite of everything. Okay, so faction research, lots of lore, plenty of detail. And the voice acting was really good. I was pleasantly surprised by that. The music, there wasn't much music, but what was there was good. And it was more atmospheric, like ambience. And it was all appropriate. It was the atmosphere itself was really, really, really good. So a lot of it on the surface was everything I was expecting out of this game. And then we get into the bad, where it's just riddled with bugs and crashes and little things that I would have thought would not be problems. Like so when you're running across a field, those animations are really good. When you use the jump jet to go from one location to another, it's fucking slow. So you get to sit there and wait for eventually you just stop using the jump jet because screw that. Overall in the game, I found that I was having to do a lot more resource grinding than I was expecting. There was some imbalance in that to some extent. And then each of the characters that you can use have secondary skills tiers when they're going up in levels where they advance in their craft and the things that they can do and their capabilities. And the second skills tier was just like completely useless. It was a total waste of points as far as I could tell in the context of the actual game. I feel like the primaries were fairly well thought out. The secondaries were not so well thought out. And then we get to the ugly, and heaven help me. I respect the people that made this game, and I appreciate that they actually made it. This game by and large, is an extremely great way to feel inadequate about life. The AI will punch you in the dick, and then it will punch you in the dick again, and then do so for a third time for good measure, because apparently when you're the CPU in this game, you get tons of extra moves, and it pisses me off. Even on the easiest difficulty, it at some point it becomes completely unbearable and unplayable for someone who is experienced in this style of game, which is me. And I'm either getting really old, pro tip, I am, yeah, or there's a disturbance in the force, and this game is not even remotely balanced yet. So I walked away from this game feeling really angry, because the sauce was delicious. Like, it was dripping with, this is going to be great. And then you get under the sauce, and it's like they couldn't even find bread for the turd sandwich. It's just turd.
Oh, man, that is a bummer to hear.
I hate saying that, and they're probably going to hear this. And again, I just want to say I'm really glad that you've at least started working on this, because this is going to be a great game eventually, but it's not there yet. And this is in a string of PC game releases where the release comes out and it's a full price game and it's not ready. This is not a good trend.
Yeah. Well, then I got to know, $40 on it. What do you say?
Pass. Hard pass.
Even though it's in Game Pass?
I mean, if it's in Game Pass and you have Game Pass and you want to see how you want to see what's up, then yeah, go for it. But like, this should have been so much better. If it had been a case where there's no intro and it drops you straight into the game and it's as incomplete as it is, I don't want to say bad, I just want to say incomplete, where the balancing hasn't been done, it wouldn't feel as bad. But they put sauce on it, and when there's sauce on my dish, I expect to be sated, and there was no satiation yet. So I'm sad, and at the same time, I'm looking forward to what this game looks like in 6 months. Like, I did this with the first of the three in a row, and then we haven't gotten to the 6 month mark on the second one, but I'm still going to come back to that one and see how it's looking. So in July, I'll be coming back to look at this one again.
Oh, man. Well, it's a bummer to hear that it didn't work out for you, but thank you as always for checking the game out for the show.
Yeah, totally. My distinct pleasure.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through the whole thing. Chris, are you still there? Or is your mic broken again?
No, I'm here.
Yay, you're here.
Yeah,
we have people in chat asking if you are okay.
Oh, he's checking out his hot nipples.
Yeah, the blazing hot nipples.
Worse than that. Wow. I was like still playing C cards, and I just dumped 1,000 quarts into winning 11 weapons, and the array that I got was spectacular.
Nice.
So the main character is a robot, and his arms change out, and if they're different weapons, then those will show up graphically. One of his weapons is an anchor arm, which is literally just Popeye's arm with the anchor tattoo.
That's beautiful.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Well, blow me down.
Yeah, exactly. And,
Popeye.
Then the girl got a kitty gun, which is a kitty with a gun. And the swordsman got the chopstick blade, which is two folded up chopsticks, and the paper is the blade, like the paper covering. So Jesus. It's like taking a pair of chopsticks and just going, yeah. And it's amazing. I love this game. Triple whatever score I just gave it.
Triple the score.
Yeah.
Triple the score.
I didn't even take a minute to notice the actual image that you sent and notice the Popeye arm and the laser gun kitty.
Yeah,
I was reading for the squirrel.
Oh, the squirrel, yeah. The squirrel did not win. Sorry to say.
You look hilariously overpowered.
Yeah, I know. And yeah, those weapons are going to last me a while, I think. But yeah, I really, really love that Kemco X Create is just not giving a fuck anymore. They're like, we've had it up here with people calling our RPGs samey.
Laser gun cat.
Yeah.
Nary a fuck was given, and it was glorious.
Yeah, yeah.
And on that note, that's how we should end the episode.
There we go.
Yeah!
George, can we get one wet pancakes out of you?
Dropping fucking liquid acid pancakes all over your aluminum cans.
God, I love it.